Another hearty thank you to Edmore's Cadillac Tampa and Edmore's Cadillac Brandon. Those fantastic dealerships make this podcast possible. It is just that simple. Visit EdmoresCadillacTampa.com and EdmoresCadillacBrandon.com. Edmore's Cadillac Tampa, just west of I-275 on Fletcher. And at Edmore's Cadillac Tampa, also, they're in the middle of the summer's best sales event. Just tremendous opportunities there. Please visit EdmoresCadillacTampa.com and EdmoresCadillacBrandon.com. We'll talk more about them later. But now it's time to find the custodian of Canton, Ira Kaufman. Tuesday, July 11th, the summer marches on the Ira Kaufman podcast. Mr. Kaufman, of course, everybody just heard that you're presented by Edmore's Cadillac Tampa and Edmore's Cadillac Brandon. As we bow to their greatness and their commitment to your work, all of it, and we're almost coming up on a year of your being with us here at JoeBucksFan.com World Headquarters. I'm Steve Isbitz. Lee DeKemper's here with us. And, of course, Ira, we'll have a celebration of
your... How are we going to celebrate, Lee? What are we going to do?
Celebrate
have a
what?
Cake? My one-year anniversary with Isbitz and DeKemper.
So long as it's not a carrot cake, unless you get rid of the damn nuts.
We're not going to hold it at 2001 Odyssey, are we, Stephen? I mean, many a party has gone down at the Odyssey.
I'm happy to go there if you'd like to go.
They got a spaceship up there. You know, I'm always good for space travel.
Yeah, I knew there was going to be a food reference. I knew it. Absolutely knew there'd be a food celebration reference. And then Lee, we got off the food and we got to the women. So that sort of spells out the way you operate here at headquarters. Ira, sure, we'll take you to 2001, get you a cake. You know, it could be a fantastic night.
Steve, now, should our listeners assume that because July 4th has come and gone, that all sales have passed us by at Ed Morse? Is that it? Are they out of the sale business, Stephen?
No, of course not. You know, we just heard all the great offers from Ed Morse. And on the website, of course, you can go to EdMorseCadillacTampa.com or EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. 70-plus years of Ed Morse greatness serving the community. Great family dealership. And start your shopping search right there, EdMorseCadillacTampa.com. And EdMorseCadillacBrandon.com. Now, Ira, here we are. We took a week off. It's part four of Dirk Cutter, the head coach of the Buccaneers himself.
It's the gift that keeps giving, Steve.
The gift that keeps giving. Well, you know what? I look back at our audio of having Dirk on the record for our chat. Obviously, we had some off-the-record chat, as guys like us are known to do. But what was on the record, more than 20 minutes. 21 minutes with Dirk.
So answered every question, Steve.
Answered every question. You know, there's not, I didn't expect anything less from the candid head coach. And frankly, that's a lot of time. So that's why we divided it up so we could really delve into it without just, you know, rambling. And like you said, it's a gift that keeps giving through July. If this was March, we would have let it rip and all in one shot.
We got him right before he boarded a plane for Pocatello. He went back to Idaho, as is his custom. He loves it out there.
All right. Stomping grounds.
So part four, without further ado. So I asked Dirk about Marvin Lewis, telling him to throw deep. That's what defensive coordinators hate. They hate throwing deep. Throw a lot deep, Dirk. That was his advice last year to Dirk Cutter. And so I asked Dirk about that and what this season might bring. And, of course, Ira, you followed up with sort of how he wants to win ball games and what it's like to keep having a bad start and what that really means for the Bucs, as we saw the last two seasons. Here's Dirk Cutter. Coach, last summer you were in Idaho. I actually paid a guy to go to the event you were at with Marvin Lewis to, you know, try to get in some questions.
The man will go to any end, Dirk.
I looked into flying to Idaho, but it was like three connecting flights and like 2 days to get there. It was terrible. Anyway, the guy kind of chickened out, local college guy there. But one of the things you did say to the reporter who you talked to a little bit was that Marvin Lewis told you to throw deep. That's how to win in the NFL. Throw deep. Defensive coordinators hate that. What kind of truth is in there? And now look at your roster this year. How does that maybe change what you do?
Well, I mean, the fact that we were way down on our explosive plays and we were the only team in the league that didn't have a pass over 50 yards last year, I think, that tells you one thing. The fact that Jason went out and got DeSean Jackson. You know, explosive plays next to turnovers is the number one factor in winning football games in the NFL. We were just way down last year. Part of that was injuries, but we need to get better throwing the ball over the top, and we're working on it.
So you kept Dirk, you keep trying to grind out
12 play 80 yard drives, it's very difficult.
It's low percentage. It's just low percentage. I mean, you can do it, but you know, chances are you're going to get a hold in there, you're going to get a drop pass, you're going to get a penalty or something that's going to knock you back. So 80 yards at 4 yards a clip is tough duty.
It's very difficult.
It's low percentage. It's just low percentage. I mean, you can do it, but you know, chances are you're going to get a hold in there, you're going to get a drop pass, you're going to get a penalty or something that's going to knock you back. So 80 yards at 4 yards a clip is tough duty.
Dirk, in your 2 years here, only one as a head coach, I understand, but the team didn't start well, Dirk, both years, 1-3. What can you do to avoid to get off to a better getaway?
Well, we got off to a great getaway last year, if you call 1-0, winning in Atlanta good.
Perfect.
But then we went and got our butts kicked at Arizona the next week. And I just talked to the guys. Today was our last team meeting before the break. I actually talked to our guys about that this morning. And, you know, everything has to be focused right now towards September 10th at Miami. That's the most important game on our schedule right now. After that's over, we'll start worrying about the home opener against the Bears. And
but as a general theory about getting off to a good start.
Well, I think you want to do that in every game, and I think especially if you look at Jameis's career, when Jameis gets off to a fast start, we usually play pretty well. When he gets off to a slower start, not as well. So, you know, that's one of the things that I think falls a lot on the offensive coaching staff to have the right game plan early in games that we don't have to tinker around to find it, that we know what we want to do. That's usually a little bit easier later in the season when you've seen teams. Those early games when you don't, you know, nobody does in the preseason exactly what they're going to do in the season.
You don't have tendencies.
You don't have tendencies. You don't, they might not even be showing what they're really going to do, what their real strength is. So there's a lot of reasons behind that, but the fundamentals of how you win and lose, the turnovers, the explosive plays, third down conversions, sacks, scoring touchdowns in the red zone. Those things never change.
All right, Ira, so then you heard, let's go backwards. Then you just heard Dirk talk about a bad start to the season, 1-3. That's a lot about the offensive coaching staff not knowing its details on being ready for an opponent as far as the tendencies and the X's and O's.
These 1-3 starts are not going to do, Lee. It's just not going to do. You don't see the Patriots go off 1-3. Even when Tom Brady was suspended, the Pats go 3-1, you know, and they use two different quarterbacks, Lee. You know, so the Bucs, while, you know, the Patriots are pie in the sky to shoot for, they got to stop with the 1-3 because you're digging yourself too much of a hole. Even the 5-game winning streak wasn't enough to get this team where they wanted to go last year. They didn't get to that number 10. And a lot of it was because the 1-3 turned into a 3-5, and we all know what happened. One other interesting little nugget, I believe I'm correct on this. I was doing some research on Winston a few weeks ago, and I mentioned that he's a slow starter. Lee, I believe he's only thrown 5 touchdown passes in the first quarter through 2 seasons. Now, that's 32 games, gentlemen. That's 32 first quarters, and I believe he's thrown 5 touchdowns. That's not going to do, Lee, so I like the fact that Cutter's taking responsibility. He's not laying it on Winston. But Winston is a slow starter, tends to be, and maybe Cutter needs to go to the Bill Walsh school where you script 20-25 plays, Lee. Maybe he's thinking about that.
Does he do that already or not? I don't know.
I don't think he does it. If he does, it's not showing up on the scoreboard, Jeff.
Well, off the top of my head, I want to say Winston was a slow starter in college as well.
He certainly was in year two.
Yes.
They pulled a lot of games out in the second half when they were badly behind. That was the forte of that team when he was a sophomore, is, you know, a lot of turnovers early and then rally because you got better talent than the other team.
Also, that national championship game, they were down, what, 24-7 or something like that?
Yes.
And then they came on like, a barn fire and beat Auburn.
Well, you know, as we just heard Cutter say, he did say, look, when Jameis gets off to a fast start in a game, we usually play pretty well, and it's on the coaching staff to get him off to that fast start. And it was so heartfelt by Cutter there saying, you know, it's really on the offensive coaches to, you know, get that game planning going early where it's so much easier later in the year. What do you make? Do you think that's coach speak of him sort of taking the pressure off Jameis, or did you feel that as something legit?
I don't think it's a ploy. Now, I do agree that he plays a lot of psychological games, Lee. That's understood. It's on record. this thing about I'm going to give up the play calling. I mean, that's the classic Cutter. You know, he had no intentions of it. But, guys, tell me if I'm wrong, but this isn't the first time that Cutter has assumed responsibility when maybe he didn't have to. For example, that little skit they did on the 28-3 with the Falcons. He says, you know, that's on the Bucs as an organization. We can't do stuff like that. When nobody was even asking him about it, it probably would have.
Oh, you mean the Twitter thing?
Yeah, the Twitter thing. Okay, it would have passed by unnoticed. We weren't asking about it.
It was noticed in Atlanta.
But, Steve, when it comes to matters of the attack, of the offense, Cutter should take responsibility, and he does take responsibility, and I like that about him.
Well, you know, we're sitting here talking about fast starts, can't repeat 1-3. If I remember correctly, you wrote a column, one of your first columns on JoeBucksFan.com. I'm thinking it was one of your first columns. It could be wrong. But you focused on recent history of this franchise. Going back to Raheem Morris, actually going back to Chucky, December's been horrible, a horrible month.
December's even worse than September, Steve. And September's no bargain. You know, when's the last time the Bucks ever came out of September 3-1? I mean, come on.
I'm not big on the history thing, Ira. Because
no, you're not, because you don't like to crack a history book.
No, because the, no.
I'm over there in the bathroom looking at statistics, as I told you last.
By the way, Pro Football Focus is hiring, Ira.
There you go.
Look, the 2005 Buccaneers have nothing to do whatsoever, not a shred. You can't even put a connection to the 2017 Buccaneers. That's why I don't like those stats. It's
just
me.
I just said the last 2 years with Cutter in-house, they were 1-3.
Well, those are legitimate stats.
Thank
those
you,
are real.
Sir.
That's why you asked the head coach that.
You may continue.
I'm not questioning the sage decision-making of Ira Kaufman. But,
and you know what? Wait a minute. Let's look at this schedule, guys.
Well, let's look at last year.
All right.
Because Cutter was talking about, we're talking about going 1-3. Last year, they got their clocks clean in Arizona in a horrible way to a team that really turned out to be not so great. And then they come home to Atlanta, or excuse me, to the Rams, and the Rams and Case Keenum ring up 30-something points on them.
The Rams.
And they lost that game in many ways because there were some misconnections on offense that should have been there. And the Rams, as Lee just said, the Rams.
The Rams, yeah.
So,
the Rams.
You know, and then week four last year, who did we lose to week four? You remember?
I can't even remember. It's all a blur, baby.
Yeah, I'm the same way. After the Rams.
What do you got?
It's a blur to me, too. That's why I was fishing for you. Well, you know what? That's fine. It's July. We don't have to remember. But they still got off to a crap-ass start. And, you know, and there we go to finally winning, getting squeaking one out with the prayer circle, Lee's field goal prayer circle in Carolina to go 2-3. It was a road game.
It was Denver.
Denver, right.
Denver.
Oh. Exactly.
When the only fans left in the last 5 minutes were Bronco fans.
And look,
we all remember that. The rain was falling, and all the Denver fans, remember?
They came down behind the bench.
And that was a great example, if we're going to read Cutter's mind, since we just heard him on the Ira Kaufman podcast. Maybe he was thinking back there, thinking, you know what? I was having Jameis possibly force some things, and Talib was jumping on him. And we're
in the press box saying, why is Winston still in the game? Remember
and
that?
Maybe we didn't call game that we wanted to against Talib and that attacking defense. I don't know. But something to think about.
That was one ugly game, Lee. That was an ugly game. And just that vision, that image of the Broncos fans and all the Buck fans are gone. Lee, they were all gone. The rain, it was a bad weather. And remember they put the ponchos on? I still remember it. And Jameis Winston is going back on a muddy field with the game hopelessly out.
And getting beat up.
You got to learn from that, guys. I don't buy that leaving Winston in. I don't like it.
Well, you're setting me up here. I'm a big believer in this. I don't care whether it's a GM or a coach, no fans. They expect results no matter what. I'm of the belief that Cutter, first-time NFL head coach, we can go to Light, first-time NFL GM. We can go to your friend Mark Dominic, Ira. First-time GM, NFL GM, these guys learn. I mean, it's like it's new to them. They're brand new. They learn. I thought Dominic got a better GM. Light his first year, Jory was big time out on his moves, big time. Now you could say Light is a godsend for this franchise. Cutter, remember, was it against Denver? No, it was against the Rams. Against the Rams.
Well, they ran out of time.
Ran out of time. They had a chance to call a timeout, and Cutter saw something, and he tried to catch him off guard.
Yes.
and it didn't work out.
He said Vincent Jackson was open and Jameis missed him. That was his answer.
But to that point, you know, you just said how Cutter, like, you know, maybe I've had Jameis force some things to Tlaib. Cutter admitted that at Rams game, you know, I guess technically everybody and their brother wanted him to call a timeout, but he saw an advantage and tried to take advantage of it, thought they were off guard, didn't do it, didn't call a timeout. Learning. Cutter's learning.
When the guy hired specifically by Dirk Cutter to keep track of timeouts and situations, he didn't listen
to
him.
And it was all this is in the first month of him being an NFL coach, head coach.
Exactly. And I remember that whole scenario, and I can't knock Dirk on that. If you think
neither
the play is there, you gotta do what's in front of you. And sure, maybe you manage the game differently earlier to have more time later. But right in that moment, if you think the play is there, you gotta take it.
It looks bad when you leave. And you still got two timeouts in your pocket. That looks bad.
I mean, I agree with Steve.
It does.
He thought it was there. You tried for it. It didn't work. And as you said, and it didn't work, and you had timeouts left, it looks real bad. You know, who knows? Maybe Cutter, in retrospect, calls a timeout, or we don't know that. But I think it's a learning progression because, again,
Definitely. This
all happened in his first few games as an NFL head coach. So, you know, hopefully he – and by the way – after he got a few games under his belt, what happened? They started on a winning streak.
Good teams jump on you early. They tend to jump on you early, well, Steve. And the Bucs have had a lot of trouble doing that.
Well, I liked what you said initially when we finished up with Dirk here on his last cut. You said the Bill Belichicks, this doesn't happen. They don't go 1-3. And I like that you went right to coaching because while Dirk talked about Jameis and players and whatever, it's still, this doesn't happen to the good coaches. It doesn't. They don't typically start 1-3. And I think it's a big focus. Dirk explained that it's a big focus. And, you know, of course, you got to win week one. Otherwise, all that goes out the window and you're scratching and clawing. And that's really critical here, week one in a tough spot.
How do you think this year's early schedule fits into this whole scenario in terms of the kind of start they need in September? Opening in Miami, Chicago coming in, going to Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's week four, Steve?
Week four is home against the Giants.
Okay.
Well, there should be 2-2, you would think. I mean, on paper, they should be 2-2. Belichick, his first couple of years, both in Cleveland and New England, specifically in Cleveland, no good, no bueno. But he learned. You know, I know you say Belichick, you argue he's up there with Lombardi. He's one of the greatest coaches ever. And Landry, for example, is a guy. You know, Lombardi is one of the very few coaches that won right away. Walsh, there's another guy. He was losing his first couple of years.
He did.
But Lombardi is one of the rare coaches who won right away. I mean, immediately won right away and then went on to...
And they were a wretched franchise. Wretched.
Oh.
Mike Smith won right away as well. Very impressive.
You're comparing Mike Smith to Vince Lombardi over there?
No. No, we're talking about coaches. Hey, I'm allowed to appreciate what Mike Smith did. The guy came in. No, nobody knew Mike Smith.
You're right.
Who's Mike Smith?
He won Coach of the Year, didn't he? In 08.
He's taken over a franchise that's completely imploded in the Falcons.
Nondescript.
He drafts a quarterback as a defensive-minded head coach, and they go 11-5.
How many years removed were they from the playoffs? Remember when Vic went up to Green Bay in a playoff game and handed the Packers their very first home play?
Yes,
how
I
many
do.
Years removed was Mike Smith in that? Because I'm thinking
a good 5 years.
Oh, was it a good 5 years?
I think
so. Smith took over in 08 when they drafted
Matt Ryan.
Mm-hmm. Ryan, and you know, Mike Vick was there. The previous year was horrible. Or who was?
Mora.
Petrino?
Petrino,
yeah.
Oh, that's right.
That was a disaster.
The whole franchise.
Well, I was thinking there might have been a foundation already there of guys that came.
No. Steve is right for once.
Okay.
Steve is right. There you go, Steve.
Yeah, it was
Happy
Bobby,
holidays, baby.
Bobby Petrino.
Yeah, walked out, didn't even say goodbye.
Yeah, it was like, a mess. Total, absolute mess.
Even worse, done.
Was that with the woman on the back of the scooter or something? Remember the back of the motorcycle?
Yeah, in Arkansas.
Right.
He's a dirt bag.
All right, so let's Lee mentioned 2-2. He put his neck out there, so they should be 2-2. Now, Ira, what do you think? Bucks should be 2-2 after four games?
Not good enough, Is, but
not
good enough.
Okay.
Miami pick 'em, yeah, probably about a pick 'em game. The odds, I think, are Dolphins by a couple of points. You got to slap the Bears down, and you got to slap them hard. You can't lose to Mike Glenn, and that might be worse than Case Keenum, gentlemen. You can't do it.
Beyond worse. If they lost to Mike Glenn at home.
We don't even want to think about that.
Oh, my gosh.
Minnesota, to me, is not as good as Miami. To me, they're a 7-win team.
Sam Bradford, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a Sam Bradford fan, guys.
He's okay.
I'm just not.
Nothing more.
And I don't think Bridgewater's going to be back that early. if he comes back.
No, he's not coming back. It'll be Sam Bradford.
You know what Bradford does? He 68% dink and dunk. That's what he does. He doesn't throw the ball down the field. And the Giants, they look like a 9-win team. 3-1. 3-1, gentlemen. 3-1.
Interesting. I'm going to stick with Lee. I think they got to get out of that 2-2. Let's face it, they have to figure out how to start fast and start solid, and this might be a great first step to go 2-2. I'm not very down on Miami. If we think Dalvin Cook is the guy we think he might be, that's a hell of a running attack with Latavius Murray and Dalvin Cook. You better be able to stop the damn run on the turf in a hurry. Would it shock me if they're 3-1? No, not at all.
Guys, here's a blessing pass.
Go ahead.
We're talking about slow starts. You know who else? This gentleman belonged to your unholy trio, as you referred to them as. Terrible starts. They had great second halves. Terrible starts. Raheem. I mean, the game planning Raheem had was awful. It's like, what were you doing?
Wait a minute, Lee. Didn't you read my column?
Yes.
2011 Bucks started 4-2. 4-2, gentlemen.
Well, I'm talking about
Lee's talking
individual
games. In games.
Oh, individual games.
All individual
Raheem's
games.
Teams were starting. They were always behind two scores. Always.
Oh,
and then halftime, they would turn it around.
Guys, listen, one quick point. We talk so much, being in the NFC South, about the elite quarterbacks that the Bucks face six times a year. But let's look at the flip side. Ryan Tannehill, Mike Glennon, and Sam Bradford. Mm-hmm. Now, Eli Manning, is quality. Quality.
Two rings.
Some people think he's a Hall of Famer, and he might be with the two rings. Beating Brady both times.
Yes.
But that's not murderer's row, Steve, in terms of those quarterbacks. And everybody thinks the Buck defense is going to be better this
that's
year.
True. If you just look at it as the quarterback names that you're facing, the Tannehill, Glennon, Bradford, and Eli Manning, yeah, you should go 3-1. So I'm going to lean 3-1.
He's coming around to the maestro.
What do you think about this, Ira? That story I wrote on the 4th of July. I'm guessing it was Jameis' girlfriend. I'm going to get kind of technical here. I know you're such a Snapchat fan, Ira. You're on it all day long. I don't do Snapchat, but I do Instagram. And besides gawking at women, I do follow some pertinent accounts, one of which is Jameis's. Well, for whatever reason, if you follow someone on Instagram and they also have Snapchat, Instagram shares those Snapchat videos, but they're time sensitive. I mean, they vanish after so long, which apparently is the beauty of Snapchat. Anyway, I guess it was Jameis' girlfriend. He had a press conference, Jameis did, at his camp back home in Alabama. And she videoed the whole, I guess his girlfriend. Somebody videoed his entire Raw press conference. And there's a few things I did to this day I haven't read yet outside of Joe Bucks fan because I recorded it. And one of the things he said, he was asked about all the quarterbacks in the division. Where does he rank? And Jameis said, well, every quarterback in the division has an MVP. Every quarterback in the division has been to a Super Bowl besides me.
That's not bad.
So he basically is admitting he's the number four quarterback. And he said, if I can compete with those guys, I'm confident in myself.
Speaking of...
Ira, well, before you, let me cut you off here, Kaufman, since I don't like your finger pointing at me here. A couple of things. First, we're here at Abe's Place. That's the music in the background. We don't usually play this kind of music at Joe Bucks Fan World Headquarters, if you can hear
usually.
It. If only when the strippers are around. But if you have your volume turned way up and you can catch a little, we're here at Abe's Place in Clearwater. A few things going on at Abe's Place. Number one, August 5th, the Training Camp Express will be taking off from Abe's Place. Luxury bus, 27-seater from our good friends at Pure Limousines, will be taking fans to Training Camp Takeover Day, departing Abe's Place at 8 a.m., returning about 15 minutes after Training Camp ends. We'll be back here by noon. And round trip, Ira, I know you like a deal. $5 round trip luxury bus. And when you get on the bus, you get a $5 off coupon at Abe's.
How the heck are you going to beat that, DeKemper?
So you're basically, it's basically.
Especially for a driver like Isbitz to get on a bus and let the driving go to somebody.
You're suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder.
Every podcast, baby. Every podcast.
Him,
so that is an unbelievable
deal. Let me translate for you, Ira. Right? So some guy wants to go to training camp with his son on Saturday, August 5th. Hop on the bus. Two seats cost you $10, and you get a $10 gift certificate at Abe's. You can have a burger and a soda for $10.
And you can drink it. They sell alcohol at the training training camp?
No. At the stadium?
At training camp? No, I've never seen it.
I don't think so.
Well, you bring it on the bus.
Yeah, yes, you can bring drinks
on
the bus. You can pack even a cooler on the bus. No problem whatsoever. Pure Limousines. I love Dennis over there. He's always willing to work with us on stuff. And we did this last year.
Surprised you couldn't work out a deal with an Ed Morse limousine over there. Wait a couple of months. You'll do that, too.
This is a luxury bus. Ed Morse doesn't sell buses, okay? It's a Cadillac dealership. Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, not bus. Right? So we did this twice last year. Both sold out.
This is the Buck Games or the training
this
camp?
This is training camp. Pay attention. Training Camp Express. The training camp.
This bitch is on fire, Lee.
TrainingCampExpress.com. That's where you got to pay for your seat in advance. They're going to sell, so I don't really need to say much more. It's a great deal, very convenient, and that's training camp takeover day. The stick carrier is going nuts.
You might have to get a second bus, Steve. You never know.
If necessary, we're going to add one, but we'll see. We'll see. All right, Ira, you were pointing at me, but I want to go back to two things. One, I got a trivia question for both of you. League, put on your thinking ears. Ira's going to answer first. Who was a captain? What notable player, other than Eli Manning or whatever, what notable guy for our listeners was a captain, a voted captain of the New York Football Giants last year?
I'm going to say, and it sounds crazy, but I'm going to say Jonathan Casillas.
Lee?
Who was voted captain?
Voted captain by his teammates.
Well, I'm sure you're not going to go with the obvious. We're not talking about three-fingered Brown, the defensive end that played USF.
You're not Jason Pierre-Paul. All right, what's your guess?
Yeah, that's a good one, but... Prince Amakamuka, however you pronounce his name.
It was Jonathan Casillas.
So, in other words, I got it right.
You got it right.
That's a great guess.
Another guy that Lovey and Jason Light gave away. Not only did he lead the, had 96 tackles last year, he had a great year the year before, voted captain by his teammates.
Couldn't play for Lovey.
Won a Super Bowl with the Patriots after he left the Bucs.
Probably wouldn't look bad on the strong side for the 2017 Bucs. And it wouldn't look bad fitting in with Alexander and David. Hey, one quick point I wanted to make on the NFC South quarterbacks. I might be pushing this a little bit, but I tell you what. There's some questions about Cam Newton.
Yeah, of course.
They're really swirling in Charlotte. They're worried.
I think
physical concerns. There's where he wears his head at. Steve, very uneasy for Panther fans right now towards that man under center. Lee, am I wrong?
Well, I think you can make an argument that Jameis is equal to Cam Newton right now. Maybe better. But to your point, I can't remember who I read this from or heard from. It was within the last week or so. This season's a crossroads for Cam Newton. Will he be elite or will he be just eh?
And you got Kuechly, the Cam Newton of the defense. You know, he's dealing with a lot of concussion issues. There's a lot of things going on in Charlotte.
Yeah, I think the concussions of Kuechly are a far greater concern than Cam Newton. Look,
big time.
A lot of great quarterbacks through pick history. They don't always have a great year every single year.
Ryan did not have a very good year 2 years ago.
Eli?
People were writing off Matt Ryan.
Eli, that's right.
People were writing off Matt Ryan. Eli Manning, he was almost run out of New York early on. You remember that.
Yeah.
And so I'm not worried about Cam Newton. There actually was a great piece on the Panthers website. I know it's the team website, but they have a new reporter there. And got very personal with Cam Newton. Very interesting piece. Go to Panthers.com. Even though you hate the Panthers, go check that out.
He seems very motivated to you.
Very focused. Very interesting. Very interesting read. Let's put it this way. If Buccaneers.com had a piece like that on Jameis, we'd all be drooling, ready to run through walls kind of stuff. All right, Ira, your podcast is on iTunes and Podbean. Everybody leave a review for the podcast. You know what? Before training camp starts, Ira, I'm going to print out some of the reviews. Some of them are quite funny, the recent ones. A lot of people responding on Podbean as well, on iTunes. So good stuff. Leave a review. We love it. So, yeah, Ira, of course, that takes us right back to what we heard Cutter say initially. Marvin Lewis told him to throw deep, and he's talking again about all the stuff we've heard before, explosive plays being the key. I thought it was interesting he said part of the lack of explosive plays was injuries. Did he really think Vincent Jackson was going to crank off?
I mean, that's Vincent Jackson from 3-4 years ago,
Exactly. Maybe he's talking about some of the O-line. I don't know. I thought the injuries thing was interesting. Doug Martin, maybe he expected more explosive runs, which was key because Martin didn't have any. So
Lee, I'll ask you this, Lee. Two parts. They didn't throw long very often. And part two, when they did, it wasn't very effective.
Unless it went to Mike Evans.
Well, I'm counting Evans because he only caught one. We caught one 45-yard pass.
I see what you're saying.
Long is relative, as my wife says.
So my question, gentlemen, is, I don't think it's a stretch to think Cutter wanted to throw long last year a lot more often than he did, but he didn't feel he had the personnel. Enter DeSean Jackson. Enter O.J. Howard as a tight end who can stretch the field.
Godwin.
The excuses are gone. Like, you got to stretch the field.
You hit the nail on the head, and Steve and I, for the better part of a year and a half or 2 years, we wore out our keyboards writing about this. Cutter simply didn't have the horses to do it. He didn't do it. He didn't have it. It was that simple. When, you know, wheelchair transporters and Vero Beach lounge lizards and what have you, that's who you're depending on. It was as simple as that. He didn't have the...
Look, we all love Mike Evans. I keep mentioning that he moves the chains better than any receiver in football, which I think is quite an accomplishment. But, Steve, facts are facts. He's not particularly skilled after the catch. Yards after the catch is not a forte so far of Mike Evans' career.
I don't think they throw him necessarily a ton of balls that he's supposed to be catching in stride. There's a lot of jump ball stuff and a lot of sideline balls. Think of all those third down passes. A lot of those are, you know, tight windows and out. Where's he going to go? But no, is he the explosive guy who's going to rip off a couple of touchdowns you don't expect every year? No. One of the things he said he was working on was speed. Interesting, I thought, Ira, when we heard Dirk Cutter just say a little bit ago, he said 80 yards and 4 yards a clip is tough duty. He doesn't want to be grinding out those drives. He wants to take those shots. As Lee said, just didn't have the horses.
And, you know, Lee, the flip side of that, and I talk specifically about the cover two, the Tampa two, that was all designed, don't get beat deep.
You mean Lovey?
Well, Lovey took over, you know, at the end, but, I mean, he believed in that concept too. Forced the other team to go 80 yards in 12 plays because, Lee, they're going to screw up. They're going to have a holding penalty. They're going to turn the ball over if you don't give them a big play. So there's a couple of sides to that. But Steve's right. From an offensive standpoint, when you look at the stats at the end of the year, Lee, the drives, the drive charts, those 80-yard drives, they're hard.
That's
tough duty.
Especially if you don't have those explosive plays, which Cutter covets, and he said that was a big
issue. You're not going to find a lot of 12-play drives during the season when you stack them up.
I got a Mike Evans element for you. You know, you're talking about Mike Evans and the lack of yak. If I recall correctly, did not Todd Monken said that's the next step in his work with Mike Evans? You know, last year was, get him calmed down,
focused.
Make sure he catches the ball,
that's
focus.
Right.
And this year, the next step in his progression is being, if he's not elite already, to be very much elite, is yak.
He's never going to be DeSean Jackson, Steve, but, you can improve his quickness.
Well, look, I'll wrap that nugget up by saying yak is more difficult when you're double-teamed every single damn time. That's two guys to get away from. A little bit different situation. You're more likely to bust those off or just beat one guy deep for that 60-yard bomb. All right, Kaufman, we're signing off on this podcast, but I'm going to scold you very quickly in about 10 seconds on two things.
Do I get a chance to respond?
I'm not sure you get a chance to respond. I'm not sure. First of all, in your column that you wrote last week about the five reasons this isn't the 2011 Bucks, you left out Mo Stovall. You can't leave out Mo Stovall.
I noticed that you put that in there, Steve.
You can't tell the story of the 2010 Bucks without Mo Stovall.
You didn't think Sammy Strouder was good enough?
You got to paint the right picture. And secondly, Ira.
By the way, Desmond Briscoe was also on that team. You forgot him, too. Keep going, Steve.
Those late victories on Raheem. I can't fault the guy. You know, everybody said Raheem was undisciplined. Didn't have the team focused. You don't come back late in games in the NFL without razor precision focus to your team late in the game when it matters most. So I think Raheem gets a bad knock on that. 10-6 is 10-6.
But they did quit on him in 2011.
They quit on him like nobody's ever seen before.
Even Deion Sanders said that. There wasn't a Thursday night game.
That was Shiano.
That was during Shiano?
Pretty sure that was Shiano.
I have no quit when I see it.
Yeah. Pretty sure that was Shiano.
Well, that only means that Deion didn't work the last 10 games of the 2011 season.
We
saw it.
That was just a horrible bludgeoning. And you know what? For anything you want to say about Josh Freeman, I don't know of any great quarterback that ever led his team, not as a rookie, but after his rookie season, get clobbered by 10 straight games in a row. You can't lose 10 in a row and call yourself
franchise quarterback. I know you want to get off this podcast, but one more thing. During that 10-game scheme, there were so many bad plays by the Bucks. You know the one that sticks in my mind? They played Houston. And I believe the game was at Ray J. and they had already lost maybe a couple in a row. So they were 4-4.
There was an epic loaf in that game by Sean, what was the guy, the safety that year? Not Cody
Sean
Graham.
Sean Jones?
Sean Jones.
Sean Jones. Well,
serial loafer,
what I remember, it. Lee, you might remember this play. I believe it was the first snap of the game by the Texans on offense. They threw a flare pass. I think it might have been Arian Foster. They threw him a flare pass, Lee, and nobody wanted to tackle him. He went 70 yards. Six guys had a good shot at him. Nobody wanted to bring him down. And I turned to Fred Goodall from the Associated Press, and I said, this game's over, Fred. They don't want to be here. And they didn't.
What'd Fred say?
Fred said, get out of here, Calvin.
He said, brush your teeth, Calvin.
That sounds like Fred.
Why'd you have the garlic chicken and sit next to me? All right, Ari, get out of here.